We continue with private members' motions and Alderman E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move the motion standing in my name, which reads as follows. The House notes that we must tackle the serious skills deficit and the real need for the instruction of high quality apprenticeships to meet the needs of existing and emerging business. Acknowledging the statement by Unite the Union on the 27th of October 2015 for the introduction of advanced apprenticeships to counteract the skills cliff edge and the growth in substandard apprenticeship provision in Gibraltar. Acknowledges the statement by the Chamber of Commerce during the 2015 general election campaign calling on the government to give assistance to private sector business which provide apprenticeship or other forms of vocational training. Acknowledges the statement presented to all honourable members of the House on the 22nd of September 2016 by concerned members of our community calling for the introduction of high quality apprenticeships for young people, and calls on the government to introduce high quality apprenticeships in traditional and trade, as well as the creation of a modern apprenticeship program for the training of skills in technology and allied services. Mr. Speaker, I brought this motion into the House because I feel, together with my colleagues on this side of the House, passionate about the creation of better opportunities for our young people. We as a community need to move fast in terms of the provision of quality training of skills, otherwise we risk being left behind in the skills race if we don't act now. It is, in my view, about quality and quantity. Brexit, Mr. Speaker, presents the biggest challenge to our community in recent times, and the best investment in times of uncertainty is an investment we make in our own human capital. We must look to Brexit in our community, and we must make sure that our people are well trained and well skilled to face the challenges that may well come. We believe that one of the crucial ways to create sustainable and long-term growth in our economy is to build a well-trained workforce. Mr. Speaker, not everyone is destined to complete a university degree. This was talked about at length by Mr. Lamas. He talked about pressurizing young people to complete university degrees. And we must, as a community, Mr. Speaker, strive to focus the development of our training program and the development of skills to an apprenticeship program which delivers on the demand for traditional skills and new modern skills, so that those who do not wish to pursue higher education, for whatever reason, Mr. Speaker, can make a contribution to our community and have a fulfilling and successful career. Higher education, Mr. Speaker, is important, and in the context of the debate that we had today in relation to co-education, most of us, if not all of us in this room, are beneficiaries of an excellent educational support and access to higher education. But it would, Mr. Speaker, in our view, be a grave dereliction of our duty if we continue to neglect those who would benefit from the development of skills-based work. In our view, apprenticeship and skills should be at the top of the agenda. Running in parallel with education, we must create a gold standard in the training of skills. I have long been vocal about the training of skills before my time in this House and now, on the subject of skills, and we have advocated for the development of apprenticeships. I, together with my honourable friends on this side of the House, have worked very hard to deliver our message on the development of the modern day apprenticeship, and we have received widespread support from the community at large. Mr. Speaker, I know the Minister for Responsibility for Training does not share our vision. In fact, in this House, Minister Lozano has positively rejected our proposals and suggestions. It is regrettable that we cannot have a meeting of minds on this most important subject with the Honourable Gentleman. I respect the Honourable Gentleman's view, but I cannot agree with it and agree with the direction that Minister Lozano is taking training and the skills within our community. I respectfully invite him to put aside for one moment his prejudices about the creation of a modern apprenticeship and pause and reflect on what we are saying. I know that amongst the government, that there are like-minded thinkers on the question of apprenticeship and skills. And the presence of Minister Costa at the Gibraltar Startup Committee brings a new sense of optimism on this side of the House that skills development is finally going to be taken seriously and given the attention it so rightly deserves. I like to believe that there is much that we have in common on the development of training and a training strategy that meets the needs of young people and provides them with vital opportunities. With that in mind, and where we can, I would welcome you politicising this issue on both sides of the House, recognising as Unite the Union The Chamber promise is done. The serious still differs based on our community. We also need to recognise the efforts of those outside this House for raising the issue by campaigning outside this House on the 22nd of September 2016. Let us not ignore the clear and unequivocal calls by the majority of people in our community on this issue. The calls by young people, parents, educators, union representatives and business leaders. Unite the Union this week repeated their request for an alternative training system and described the existing minimal training mechanism as inadequate. We must not, as a Parliament, underestimate the strength of feeling on this issue. And I would invite the government to join us and the rest of the community and actively explore ways in which we can together develop an apprenticeship programme which meets the wider needs of our community. That, in essence, is the purpose of this motion, and it is hoped that the government takes the motion in the spirit that it is intended. When looking at apprenticeships and speaking to many people, I have been reminded of the dropout apprenticeship. People have spoken of the lament and the loss of key skills and demise of dropout apprenticeships and look to it with great affection. The world has changed, but there is much that we can learn from how these apprenticeships worked in the past, and I'm sure the Honourable Minister will no doubt in his intervention provide us with a detailed analysis of the workability or otherwise of a dropout type apprenticeship in 2016 and its applicability to other trades and the modern apprenticeship. We live in challenging times, and it is our view that we must totally assess where we are with skills and where we need to be. This is not about it, conducting a skills survey and plugging the skills gap. It is much, much more. It is about a 20-year plan for creating opportunity for all and supporting sustainable growth. I have spoken to many technology companies who want to recruit our people. And despite the clear interest from young people, they often lack basic skills which should be supported at school and ultimately by the government. Our new industries must be supported with a skilled and adaptable workforce, and we have been found wanting. Mr. Speaker, the emphasis is wrong in my view. It must start with the early years and move right through our educational system in which apprenticeship is not characterised as an alternative scheme for underachievers, but a clear pathway for successful careers for those who do not want to pursue higher education. Each and every one of our young people represent a golden opportunity for our community, and we cannot afford to let any of them down. If we are as a community going to encourage new business to establish the present integration, then our people should be those who look to recruit. We're only as good as our people, and our best investment is in our human capital. And therefore, I call on the government to strive for the introduction of a high quality apprenticeship into traditional schools and modern programmes in technology and allied services. Our people should get a first choice because they are the best. And to do that, we need to show the responsibility in partnership with business to do that. This is 2,000 women.
I now propose the question in the terms of the motion moved by the Honourable Lady Phillips. The Honourable Mr. Costa.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Leader of the Opposition this afternoon, I'm sure I heard him say that he thought that our contributions today were a fabric, a breakthrough. But Mr. Speaker, this chamber has always enjoyed robust argument and counter-argument, and I do not think that there is anything wrong with the government ministry standing in the House to strongly put our points of view across, especially when the motions presented by the Honourable Members' offices implicitly set out a premise which we just cannot accept. By setting out a motion that somehow suggests that this government, has not done anything on training, Mr. Speaker, requires a robust response, and for all of the reasons that I've just set out, we will prove this afternoon that, in fact, this government has done more for training and more for employment in 5 years than the GST dreamt of doing and never did in 16 years. Mr.
Speaker, if there is anyone inside or outside of this House who does not need a friend and colleague to speak to an opposition motion, which he is primarily addressing, it is, of course, a redoubtable ground of divorce politics, which is my honourable friend, Mr. Joe Bottano. If I say, Mr. Speaker, it is only because I know now from bone marrow experience that he has a genetic inability to set out for the record everything that he has done. And I have no such qualms in setting out every single achievement that the Honourable Minister of Australia has set for training, for employment, for the present and for the future, and for the prospective authority of our small nation, Mr. Speaker. And of course, Mr. Speaker, I do so without ever having mentioned to the Minister of the Federal that I intend to speak on that term. Mr. Speaker, the assistance motion as currently drafted, implicit in what is being said, is nothing more than, I dare say, a self-uninspiring, science-fictional piece of regrettably predictable partisan political theatre. There has to be said that this science fictional, science fictional because on these senses we are unsure how this government or indeed any other government can train our compatriots for a business that is emerging. Thought of course, subscribing to Harry Potter's Book of Wizardry, asking for a fully functioning crystal ball, or indeed graduating from a yet to emerge master in political reading. Mr. Speaker, we deal in facts, and when the honourable gentleman opposite talks to me about vision, I must throw my hands to my head. I remember the Theatre Royal Hall in vision of the GST, a £24 million airport, which ended up being a £25 million air terminal, another vision of the GST. Having a hospital in an office block financed by PFI that cost the taxpayer so much more than had been built in purpose-built hospital. That is the vision of the GST, Mr. Speaker. So, with a good enough vision, let's all throw our hands to our heads and think of what they are soon, which are nightmares. And, Mr. Speaker, of course, and having said the introduction to my remarks, in the way that I have to obviously thank the Honourable Leader of the Opposition for his very kind words this morning when he thanked me for the Minister for Justice, which of course I very much appreciate. Mr. Speaker, so in order to be able to ground this debate in reality and to be able to ground this debate on the facts as they exist, we must set out what I think are the government's main achievements in employment and in training in the proper context. And in so doing, let the public decide, indeed, on an objective assessment on the facts and the figures, who in this chamber, which team in this chamber, has done more for persons unemployed and persons requiring training in our nation. Mr. Speaker, it will not have escaped the notice of honourable gentlemen opposite and the honourable lady, but it will not have escaped the notice of opposite honourable members. This includes the statistics office, not Minister Costa, not Minister Sacramento, not even the Minister for Economic Development, who sets out in an employment survey, back upon one, the fact of employee growth in employee jobs in our economy. Recording 1,722 jobs in 1 year. This, Mr. Speaker, is the highest number of employee jobs ever recorded in an employment survey and is a testament to the success of what I never tire of saying is our tiger-like economy. Indeed, you see, it's not me, but the economists have said so in previous publications that Gibraltar boasts of a tiger-like economy and the regulatory, fiscal, budgetary, and legal environment the government has carefully managed to take office. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, it will not
not be a coincidence to anyone who objectively analyzes the situation that the highest number ever of Gibraltarians in employment was last year at 11,010. We do believe, Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Mr. Phillips has said, that we are as good as our people. And as I will demonstrate, it has been this government that has rolled up its sleeves and has worked tirelessly with those who are unemployed and those seeking training to be able to achieve their objectives and indeed enter the labour market. In addressing the subject of the motion, it was the private sector, Mr. Speaker, that saw a growth of 1,629 in October of last year. And of course, Mr. Speaker, these facts, which I have just mentioned, and the rate of employment, I have to say, put in doubt, and I would say even put to shame, the record of the GST and when they were in government.
I have to remind the Honourable Minister, if it's time to respond to, I'm prepared to allow certain references to be made to the high level of employment, to the fact that there is very low unemployment, and so on. But these matters are only loosely relevant to the motion. The motion is not about employment. The motion is not about. The motion is more about skills and apprenticeship. As I say, I'm prepared to allow him to make some references in passing. I didn't stop him. What he had to say about the airport or about the Theatre Royal by way of introduction, I let him get away with that. But these are not matters which are germane to the motion. So by all means, make some passing reference, but we cannot develop those points to any great extent because they are not relevant to the motion.
I'm grateful to the Chair for his remarks, the reason for setting out the labour market, as I explained in my second, Mr. Speaker, is for the very simple reason that it is a motion for the House that suggests that there is a skills cliffing and that there is a serious deficit in training that has to be people to be trained. And therefore, if I am putting to the House that there is the highest number ever of Gibraltarians employed in all the different areas of our economy, which are set out in the employment survey, it is, I think, Mr. Speaker, respectfully germane to the extent that if we are to analyse objectively and empirically and investigate which sectors, indeed, should there be a need for training, that we set out, first of all, the labour framework, which of course is our labour market. And Mr. Speaker, talking about training and continue to address the motion. The Honourable Gentleman opposite to know that when the manifesto was prepared in last year and presented to the public, we set out there the government's achievement in respect of training. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, we set out the facts and the figures of what had been achieved so far. And one failure, perhaps, Mr. Speaker, is that out of a total of 276 trainees who are employed by the five government training companies, 168 of them, Mr. Speaker, were employed in the private sector. This is the point that I was making before Mr. Speaker's contribution. And Mr. Speaker, following on employment, there has been no mention by the Honourable Gentleman opposite that for there to be a proper identification of the skills that are required and for which the government should put in place any training programs, we did launch the Minister for Education and I this year an employment development service, which was started by the former Minister for Employment, the Honourable Mr. Bunner, who went literally to schools to advise school children of the skills that will be required by our economy. And it is therefore, Mr. Speaker, not a coincidence that following the Honourable Gentleman's identification of such skills, we now have over around 60 students who are training for accounting and finance, to be able to do the job in auditing and accounting and industry, Mr. Speaker, where there has always been a shortage of skills, but now where there are over 60 students being able to, who are obtaining the skills to be able to enter the job market. And of course, Mr. Speaker, it also has to be said in terms of the comments that the Honourable Mr. Phillips said about who are as good as our people. Over the 3 months in, that started round about in June of this year, as I can recall, that we were able to employ 172 previously unemployed persons who have come to this government for help. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, it is, in my view, somewhat rich for us to be lectured about helping people in finding employment or in training, when this is the government, Mr. Speaker, that has assisted as much as is humanly possible and is proven by the facts that I have set out a few moments ago as to all the people who were previously unemployed and now both of being in full-time employment. And in that respect, Mr. Speaker, it did not go unnoticed that in the 4 years that this government has been in office, there have been 730 full-time jobs for given carers, Mr. Speaker. That is, in our view, I think, a very fair summary of the achievement of this government since taking office. Mr. Speaker, in terms of the training that has been conducted until now, and I already referred the Honourable Gentleman to pages 32 and 33 of our manifesto, and in that, in those pages, we have just some of the most salient points that I'm sure the Honourable Minister of the Summit will take to further elucidate in the course of this debate. But it has to be remembered, Mr. Speaker, that when we prepared this manifesto in 2015, the number of civil servants in the construction sector had risen. And it has to be recalled that previously we had heard when we were on the opposite side of the South that civil servants did not want to be in the construction sector, and that is why they were not in the construction sector. And as the Honourable Minister of the Senate will now prove when he addresses the South, that there was a vertiginous increase in the number of civil servants who took to working in construction, in the construction centre. Further, Mr. Speaker, since introduction by Minister Masana of 50 and years, a total of 209 at the time of writing the manifesto had successfully completed the craft apprenticeship and were awarded or were awaiting that certificate. That is, Mr. Speaker, at the time of last year, 209 trainees in less than 4 years compared with 124 in 15 years. Does the Honourable Gentleman therefore not realise how hollow his prosecution sounds when in 5 years we were able to see so much more than they did in 16? In time, Mr. Speaker, in burgeoning fields as well, the Honourable Minister of the Fellow was able to start providing care training, and I'm sure the whole House will agree that care provision is, of course, a burgeoning field in terms of employment. Mr. Speaker, in case of some, there was, in the 3.5 years from February 2012 to August 2015, a total of 1,242 previously unemployed persons who had obtained employment after failing, Mr. Speaker. But it is clearly the case that there has been plenty of substantial, meaningful, still training in Gibraltar in the time that we have been in office. And Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman opposite also said that we should pay heed to being able to provide a training to other businesses and make sense of the Chamber of Commerce's demand. Mr. Speaker, in that respect, who the Honourable Gentleman opposite knows that the Honourable the Chief Minister announced training costs as an expense against profit of a business or company at the rate of £150. Mr. Speaker, that means that a company that invests £1,000 in training with employees with a view to them obtaining skills or qualifications now are able to obtain £1,500 as a deduction against its profits for their title period on tax consultation. So that is a clear incentive which they should get well the point that the Honourable Gentleman made in respect of not providing sufficient incentive for training and making the Chamber's comments. And Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman opposite also has to note that while noting the claim that has been done by the Honourable Minister of Finance, it is also a fact that the Department of Education also provides for persons who want to be trained in certain skills, such as electricians, to be able to pursue that route as well. So it is not just one route that is available to persons who require or wish to raise the level of ambition and to be able to train, but there is in fact another route available to them. Mr. Speaker, in all to say that it is not realistic and it is not fair to say, and it is not right that it should be a motion before the House suggesting that there has been no training or very little training or substandard training when a quick read of the manifesto and the statistics that are contained in here shows that in fact there has been training and the results that have been achieved from. So, Mr. Speaker, for all of these reasons, I will robustly ask my colleagues to, of course, vote against the motion presented by the Honourable Mr. Phillips, because if ever there has been a team of people, down to a man and to a woman, who has cared about finding employment for the unemployed, who has cared in making sure that people are trained and have the right skills to be able to enter the labour market, Mr. Speaker, it is this government.
Any other member of the opposition making a contribution to the Honourable Gentleman?
I think I wanted to make a contribution, but I was waiting for the Honourable General Thomas, who had indicated the last question time that he was going to provide certain figures as requested in question number 682 to 685, inclusive. If I make a contribution now, Mr. Speaker, I'll use my clock, so we call it. I then wouldn't be able to reply or make use of any of the figures that the Father House is going to provide. So I don't know how we can solve this, but I do have at least some information to be able to make.
Speaker,
I want to listen to what everybody has to say before I answer them all. I can only speak one.
Sometimes the problem really is in trying to determine the order in which members are going to speak. When you come across,
because I have the title of the Father of the House, and he has a soft spot in my heart, I have a soft spot in my heart for him, I go first and then he can hear what I have to say in relation to this. And I hope that he will reciprocate by providing you with this sort of question as he promised in the last question of Parliament.
Speaker, I am just going to talk about a very narrow aspect of this debate that has been brought into sharp focus by the contribution of Minister Gosper. Now, Minister Gosper made a point, and he said, but how can we train people in the industries of the future? We don't know what the industries of the future are. And you know, to hammer home this political point, he said, it's political voodoo, a crystal ball from Harry Potter. And then even to hammer the case even further, he mentions the hole in the ground at the airport, which the Honourable Gentleman opposite might weave into every single political point and every single political debate that they make. But Mr. Speaker, I think that's at the heart of an important division between the opposition and the government in relation to this point. Because our position, for a number of years, ever since that I have been leader, the position has been that what we ought to be doing is conducting a survey, engage with industries, look at what employers want in terms of training, how employers see the economy moving in the future, what does the government, how does the government itself see the economy and sectors moving in the future, what are the sectors that we want to be attracting to Gibraltar, and then train people in those sectors. Now, that's our philosophy. It's not about voodoo, it's about preparation. It's about looking forward to what we think Gibraltar is going to look like. What are the industries of the future? What are the industries that we ought to be, as a nation, training our young people so that they can take up those opportunities? And the difference between the government and the opposition, highlighted by the sarcastic comments of the Honourable Gentleman, is that they take a different view, and I understand it in fact. I'm not sure that the Honourable Gentleman understands it, but I understand it, because I understand what the Honourable Mr. Bolzano, where the Honourable Mr. Bolzano, Minister Bolzano comes from. The philosophy of the government, in statements made by Minister Bolzano, is, well, actually, let's do something different. Let's analyse in the labour market, and that's the first survey that was made by the government chaired and headed by Minister Bolzano. Let's analyse what are the jobs at the moment in the economy. We look at the jobs that are there in the economy at the moment. We look at the nationalities of people within those particular jobs. And then what we do is we try and fill those jobs with Gibraltarians by training people to do those jobs. That's where the philosophy of the government, and I understand it. And what is and what that has, in my view, and I understand it, and to a certain extent it's logical, and there is a point to it, and there is a worthwhile point to it. But what it does in our respective views, it focuses the skills of people on a very narrow platform. And that is, what are the jobs today? What are people doing today? And let's get our own employees to replace the old workers in jobs. And that's why, for example, in terms of the training and construction centres and the other training centre in Gibraltar, what the government is basically doing is focusing on the workplace, for instance. Because the government says, right, the jobs in construction and wet trade, the cement, or the bricklaying, those kinds of. But it's narrow, Mr. Speaker. I understand that there is a benefit to that. I understand that. But it's narrow because we should be training people in a much wider skill set than just simply the wet trade. We should be looking at electricians, we should be looking at carpenters, the traditional skills, which are being forgotten, they're being taken up by, or we're having to import that skill set from outside, because we're not training our people in those skills. And therefore, training is much more than just analysing the figures, much more than just analysing the nationalities. It's also about proper planning, it's also about a much wider skill set and looking to the future. And that, without looking at any Harry Potter crystal ball, or without any voodoo economics or voodoo of any kind, it is really what we believe that we ought to be doing. And that is my own contribution. That is what probably I have urged the Honourable Member and the Honourable Member's opposite to be doing, is to be looking at that wider skill set. We are losing those skills. We are losing those skills, and we are also losing a golden opportunity, particularly now that we've got to have have an eye not only on the present, but also on the future, because of Brexit, and looking at what are the skills that an economy that now needs to move on, that needs to diversify into different sectors, what are the skills that are going to be necessary for the future. And that would be a point in an answer. I hope I've fairly summarised what the differences are between us. So that is the approach question that we would advocate on this side of the house, and therefore I associate myself with everything that the Honourable Gentleman, my Honourable and learned friend, Mr. Phillips, has said, and I do commend the motion to him. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I have some difficulty understanding what we're hearing from the other side of the House in a number of different ways. And the first is that I remember when, in the election in 2011, the future job strategy was announced. And everything that the Honourable Leader of the has been talking about just now has been talking about looking at the future, to ensure that in the future we have people in the position to take jobs locally to support the local economy. And I remember also at the time I wasn't in this house hearing John Remember talk about the failed job strategy. And so if you rewind the clock 5 years to 2011, when the future job strategy, failed job strategy, and that, and you then fast forward 5 years, I think that there is going to be the remotest bit of fairness, the members of this would have to conclude that the future job strategy has been a huge success. And how do you measure that success? Well, this is figured in many ways by looking at the numbers of employment. And at the last election in 2015, the Honourable Leader of the Motion would go on television, and even in their pamphlet, talk about dead-end jobs. But in fact, what we were doing was training people in dead-end jobs. We never found out what those dead-end jobs were, and we still haven't heard that today, of course. And that seems to have slipped through the net. We haven't heard it since much of the 2015 election. But in real terms, when you look at the motion that has been proposed by the Honourable Member, and you read serious skills deficit, and he talks of high quality apprenticeship. But, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to understand what a high quality apprenticeship is. Because we haven't told it. We don't know what advanced training is. We don't know what high skilled apprenticeship is. It high skilled is the tool that you use for making 50 members of the base of China. What is it? Because he said absolutely nothing. And in that pamphlet in 2015, absolutely nothing about what this great training scheme that we're going to provide for the future of Gibraltarians is. And I struggle to understand. He says that the motion should be taken in the spirit that is intended. And in the first line, I don't know what spirit is already intended, notes that we must tackle the serious skills deficit. Are you serious? Are you seriously telling this side of the house that you expect us to take the motion in good faith? Good faith, which one of the leader of the opposition said that's what the motion this morning is about. When you're telling us that there is a serious skills deficit, that we need high quality apprenticeship, that we have a skills cliff edge, substandard apprenticeship, I am the newly named Minister for Commerce. So I represent the bulk, I say, of the working community. And I do through the Finance Centre Council, which represents the entirety of the financial services sector, the Gibraltar Gaming and Betting Association, the entire gaming. I know you didn't mention them in the conflict, but I think when you talk about skills, you don't want to have the GDP in the back of your mind. I talk to the Chamber, and I talk to the GFSB. And as the Honourable Minister, Mr. Costa, just said, the one item that he refers to in his motion has actually already been done. as if you haven't even realized. The speaking of motions, you talk about providing private sector business with support and assistance, has been done since the last election. When we talk about all of these things, and when I talk to all these different groups and associations that really represent the entirety of the business community, not one has they said to them, we really have a skilled person. We really have a skilled place edge. We really need high quality apprentices, which God knows what that means. And I was hoping today, with this motion, that the Honourable would get up and spell out once and for all what it is that the GSC and the opposition mean when they talk about high skilled apprenticeship. What they mean by their skilled school and the other bits and sound bites that they mentioned, but indeed all from this part of the house seems very much the same. It sounds good, but it's actually meaningless. There's no substance to what they're telling. And so I don't understand how you could ever have a motion before this Parliament talking about skills, talking about labour, talking about employment, without in the very first line congratulating the Honourable Minister Joe O'Connell for absolutely everything he's done to achieve the highest levels of employment level with the lowest levels of unemployment level. I'm not surprised they don't want to listen, because it can't make very pleasant hearing. But Mr. Speaker, in all seriousness, a motion that seeks to denigrate the training and the skills that this side of the House has provided is frankly astounding. And the Leader of the Opposition talks about the division between us, and I think we analyse a few parts to correctly with a degree of accuracy. But for me, it's more about another word that's been so much left to you on that side of the House, it's about a vision. We don't believe in vision, we believe in reality. And we believe in getting people trained and into jobs as quickly as we possibly can for their long-term future and for the benefit of our community in securing that. Anything other than that, is simply playing politics with people's lives. And I don't believe that anybody in this Parliament should stand before the community today and mess around with talking about these things which are absolutely meaningless. They sound good, they promise a lot, but as usual, they deliver nothing. Thank you.
The Honourable Bart Hinton.
Mr. Speaker, the motion before the House of afternoon is no less important than that one this morning. We have a duty in Parliament, obviously, to provide meaningful jobs for all. Now, I just heard the Minister for Trade, or the Minister, congratulate the government for the highest level of employment. Now, the line downline is specific to important for the Parliament. We'll leave this season later. The highest level of jobs ever in this economy was a growth of 1,722 jobs from 2014 to 2015. It's interesting when you analyze that growth number, which is 7.1%, because of that, those 1,722 jobs generated in this economy in that year, for which we haven't paid credit, 1,248 of those workers are described on nationality in the official statistics report as Spanish. So their fantastic growth of 7.1% in 1 year, of those jobs, 72.5% went to our friends across the way. I see the Italians listening would be interested to know, well, of those 1,722 jobs that this government has generated, how many went to Gibraltarians? Well, according to this, 19 went to Gibraltarians, which is more or less about 1.1% of the growth. So, members here, we can talk about statistics and more statistics, but the fact of the matter is the job growth has not gone to Gibraltarians. And this is something that I think has to be made clear.
It is not just a statistical matter, but to whom these jobs go to. I remember many years ago, when I was doing a new economic analysis for the economy, I went to the staff office and I asked to get unemployment statistics. I was actually told, well, we don't actually produce those. And there's been a lot of talk about reduction in unemployment. But unfortunately, in this report, which is quite rightly called unemployment report, there's nothing about unemployment, nor do we have any accredited statistics in here talking about unemployment levels. It may be something that this financial institution government may consider introducing. Now, of course, unemployment service, which makes employers of the, by definition, only existing jobs. There's nothing in here that talks about unemployment, the length of unemployment, the nationality, the period, other things like that, which would be useful in any normal economy. And we hear quite a lot about the unemployment rate in the UK going up and down, America the same way, non-farm payrolls in the US. But in Gibraltar, we don't have any. To say, oh, no, we don't. If anybody does have it, or it is public, please let me know. I'd love to know. So, when we talk about statistics, we have to be very careful, because I was trying to hide and spin them any way you want. And if the sound knows that, I know that. But the reality of the man on the ground is, have they got a job, have they got a future, is it a meaningful job? And for those reasons, yes, I identify very much with my learned colleague, Moses. And the Moses phrase talks about, effectively, meaningless comments about skills gaps and what are we really talking about. Well, perhaps we should go and think in terms of product and what we might be meaning in work. Because United Union, I quote, and this is only yesterday, United Union says it's concerned about the skills gap that exists regarding manual trades in Gibraltar. Their words, not mine. Yes. United says it cannot allow Gibraltar to see itself short of trades people and believe the lead work for resolving the matter needs to start now. Union recognizes the current mineral trading mechanism, but claims this training program is inadequate. The former Gibraltar for the quality trade people of the year. Mr. Speaker, those are not words coming from the opposition. They're not words coming from Chile. These are words coming from the United Union. The union has responsibility to look after its membership and ensure that they have good and meaningful jobs in the future. I think, Mr. Speaker, the reasons why I outline the United Union what we are concerned is statistics don't necessarily indicate what the government will wish us to believe. And for those reasons, Mr. Speaker, I identify myself as a motion by my learned colleague, and also all of you that can carry this motion.
I'm not good with that. I'm not sure which of the three motions I should be speaking to. Because there is a motion by Mr. Phillips, and a motion by Mr. Clinton, and a motion by Mr. Peter. So they talk about three different concepts. Let me say the one I have political difficulty in agreeing with is the one from the leader of the opposition. But of course, what he said has nothing to do with the motion that has been brought to the House. Because what he has told us is that the difference between us, that is between the party in opposition and the party in government, is that they understand that we are looking at the present requirement, but they believe we should be looking at the future. And I understand what he's saying, but I will explain to him why, in fact, there is a flaw in the analysis that he's put to us. The honorable member is right, and I'm grateful to him, not because he's being nice to me because he loves me, but because he's being accurate, which is something I think he should comment to his colleagues. I'm being told when he talks to our members, but he's been accurate. Okay. It is true that we carry out those skills of this. In fact, I would remind the leader of the opposition of his colleagues, the present colleagues didn't know that he had done it because I was asked when it was going to be done, in an earlier meeting of the House, Speaker, left election, I have to remind them that it had been done in 2012, and it was a very comprehensive thing. It was based on records that are not 100% accurate. Because for the benefit of Mr. Clinton, let me say that we consider the figures on the level of employment that are provided by the returns from employers to be more accurate than the figures that exist in the record of the Ministry for Employment, for the simple reason that quite often people employ people and their employees are recorded because the contract of employment is recorded. But very frequently, the termination is not recorded, or if recorded, it's recorded a long time after it happened. So there is a discrepancy, and there has always been, of the order of 2,000 or 3,000 between the people that are supposed to be working in Gibraltar according to the records of the UTV and the people that are employed in Gibraltar according to the records of the employment survey. So the government, this government and previous government, have used the more conservative figure as the more accurate one. And that conservative figure shows the increase that there has been in the private sector, not in pseudo jobs, as the honorable mover of the motion has described it in the past. Pseudo private sector jobs, you know, real private sector jobs. So we move in a situation where our training has been geared to make sure that we took a greater number of people into jobs who were residents that previously were taken by frontier workers. The economy has grown. So although we increased the percentage of Gibraltarians in employment in 2011, if you look at the 2012 employment survey, you will find that in that year, the total number of workers came down because the construction slowed down. And in the construction sector that was sinking, the number of Gibraltarians went up. But of course, subsequently, with the developments that have been taking place in recent years, the construction sector expanded. And that expansion brought in workers from outside. And we've always accepted that when you've got a lot of building going on, the size of the construction sector, at least, it's always been described by me in this term, and nobody is ever challenging. There is a size of construction industry in Gibraltar of around 2,000 people that is there all the time. And there is a size of construction sector that is between 3,000 and 3,500, which is there when there is a lot of building. What we need to do in terms of having a resident construction workforce is to look at ensuring that we have as many as of the jobs in the 2,000 categories as possible. And that is what we set out to do. And it is not true that we concentrated on the workplace to the exclusion of everything else. What we did was we put more emphasis on the workplace. And therefore, the intake in the construction training center have been 8 for plumbing, 8 for carpentry, 8 for painting, and 24 for the workplace. And I explained from the beginning, and there was logic and genuine intention in the motions that are brought by the members opposite, then you would expect that the explanation that we gave would have some effect. But if somebody says something in a motion which is the same thing that they said in the election, and they ignore everything that I was said before the election, everything I was said during the election, and everything that I said since the election, I'm carrying on saying the same thing. Well, look, as my colleague has already pointed out, how can we know that there is a serious skills deficit that we must tackle? If we know that there is a serious skills deficit we must tackle, with the move of emotional deficit, the honorable Mr. Clinton says it exists because the union said so yesterday, and the leader of the opposition says he doesn't know if it exists because we need to do a survey of the business to find out if it exists. And that is what we need to be doing.
but it cannot exist because it's looking to future skills in future industry. I don't dispute that that is a policy which is not necessarily different or in conflict with ours. I think the policy described by the leader of the opposition, with which I have no quarrel, is compatible with ours. But it cannot be the exercise that we need to do to train the people that are unemployed now. Because if we provide training now to the unemployed people, in expectation that there will be a future demand for those skills, and the demand doesn't arise, they won't be in a vacant job, they'll be in zero job, they will be unemployed, there will be more skilled but still without work. And that is why investing public money in providing skills starts from the premise that it has to be demand-led. So that is the difference. That we train in the knowledge that there is a skills deficit. For me, a deficit is a gap between supply and demand. I don't know what the honorable member means by it, but that's what it means to me. And I can only assess that the gap exists by using two sources of information, which is what I have used. And one source of information is there a gap that is currently being filled by outsiders, which I know can be filled by our people, not because we need to stop the outsiders, but because there is a huge turnover. The transient workers in Gibraltar have a churn of 4,000 a year. We lose 4,000 people, and 4,000 new ones come in. Well, look, if we got 300 people out of work, and 4,000 people leave, all we need to do to help the unemployed is to see which of the 4,000 jobs that have been turned vacant because people have left, not because the economy is shrinking, because the labor market is expanding, so we can look to the jobs that are coming new, and the jobs that are becoming vacant, and turn over training into those areas. And that will lead to employment with future purpose of training. If we, in addition, think that there might be a skills deficit in the future, in skills that don't now exist, then I have no problem with that as put by the leader of the opposition, because that is not in conflict with what we are doing in the present circumstances, but is looking to the future. And I believe we need to look to the future. But the indications of what might come in cannot come simply from asking the person to do that. It is possible to inward investment. This is why the training precisely is in the Ministry for Economic Development and has been from the beginning linked to inward investment. Because the original concept from the start was that if an investor comes tomorrow and says, I want to bring a new industry to Gibraltar, but the skills that I need do not exist, we will not wait for the police to hang over. What we will do is say to the new employer, you have to tell me what skills you need. I will give you all the necessary support. If you need work permit, I will give you a work permit, but there will be one condition. There has to be X number of locals shadowing the people you bring in. For which we will pay. We provide them free. And then, when the local guy is trained, he takes over from the outsider. That is looking for future skills, for future industry, linking it to things that are coming in. Until now, we have not had that kind of new skills being demanded from us. Because until now, the expansion that we have has not been from totally new industries, but from expanding organically from people who are here already, or from people who came throughout the days who are here. We have gaming companies or other entities coming in, entering a market that was already there. We have insurance companies coming in, entering a market that is already there. And if we're really serious, if this is not just plain politics, which I believe it is, but if it isn't, then the debate has to be serious, it has to be professional, and it has to be technical, and it has to be based on facts. And there are no facts. We start from a position where what we are being asked to do is the antithesis of the democratic process. Because the honorable member says this was the difference we had in the election campaign. Well, look, this is the manifesto we had in the election campaign. And we were voted
to implement this. We produce a different account, class appraisal and vocational training. We explain what we have done, and we ask people for a mandate to carry on doing it. Well, this is bigger. The position of politicians is that they are expected to implement their manifestos when they get into government. When the GSB was first elected to the House in 1996, the first thing they did in the first 2 months was to bring a sanction motion against them. It's taken the process of the season a little bit longer than we could have asked them. And I said to them, well, look, in the sense of it, the logical thing is that if you were to win, we would have to resign and follow the election. Something that I will endorse is that beating you 73 to 20, I don't mind repeating the exercise. Well, obviously, the pressure will not be as great this time, because this time you only beat them 63 to 37. But with a bit of pushing, of 58. Of 58 to 37, we're together, so I think it might be all the nice things you said to me at the beginning. So, what is it then that we should do if we are aware to not fulfill our manifesto? Look to there. So, what is it that they have in there that we should be looking to? Can I remind the leader of the opposition that he invited the electorate to welcome the 2015 manifesto? And Marion explained all the things that we were doing wrong, which is perfectly legitimate if he wanted to vote for him and not the rest. He then said, and here, this is in the manifesto. Having first welcomed them to the manifesto, this is in the manifesto. But we are still finalizing it, but here are some of our priorities. Well, they haven't finished finalizing the manifesto. They still say the same things that they did when they were beginning to prioritize it. I mean, you know, in politics, people are criticized for not fulfilling the manifesto. They didn't even get around to printing it or producing it. It's a failure of a magnitude that is geometric, not arithmetic. And they criticized us for what we do. They were saying the same thing then. We will abolish the future job strategy and the false promises. Our apprentices will be given the opportunity of learning real skills for real jobs. Well, why do they want to know what people are learning? Why is it that in the 15 years from the time that Pepito Valentino left the training center, which is a year that introduced most trainees, by the way, it went down after that with every year of the DOD. In those 15 years, the construction training center was producing the same skills in the same trade. What was it about those 15 years that stopped in 2011 and then it became unreal jobs and unreal training? The honorable member is asking, am I going to give him the information that he has for question time? Well, yes, I will give him the figures showing who is being currently unreally trained for unreal jobs. The low quality, useless training that is now being done by the people in the training center who were doing wonderful training between 1996 and 2011 and decided, for reasons not known to be, to stop being given people quality real training and produce rubbish training. Rubbish training will somehow become the City and Gates Institute of the United Kingdom as accepting as real, and they gave certificates and signed them. And we've got, at the moment, 4 doing plumbing at level 2, 1 doing tiling at level 2, 1 doing bricklaying at level 2, 2 doing plastering at level 2,
just doing carpentry a little too. I hope that makes him happy, Mr. Speaker, because when he spoke, he was concerned that I was only doing wet trade and not doing carpentry. Just doing carpentry. And keep doing painting. They all started in the training center in October 2015. In the case of engineering apprenticeship, the numbers and start dates are as follows. Fabrication of welding, 2 at level 3. I don't know if level 3 is a sufficiently high level, or the honorable member wants us to do welding at level 4, which I understand is the equivalent of an honors degree in welding. 2 doing mechanical engineering at level 2, who started in 2016. 4 are doing mechanical engineering at level 3, who started in 2014. 4 doing mechanical engineering at level 3, who started in 2016. So, in mechanical engineering, we've got a total of 10. If mechanical engineering sufficiently attractive skills to certify the honorable member, or is that dead-end job rubbish still as well? Or is it that we don't know what is happening? Electrical engineering, we've got 3 at level 3 and 8 at level 3. The 3 are the ones who started in 2014, and the 8 are the ones who started in 2015. 11 being level 3. Level 3 is something that is not required for a class rate of pay. As previous ministers of employment in the GSD administration have told the House for 15 years. Or is it that before a level 2 was a class skill obtained by an apprentice which enabled him to get the class rate of pay, which is accepted by the employers in the industry and accepted by the union, and now the fact that we've got so many people going level 3 is that we're failing and we're doing minimal training. The number of intakes per financial year in both centers have been 11, 12, 1. I'm not counting the ones that happened before November 11. 12, 13, 3. 13, 14, 11. 14, 15, 21, and 15, 16, 12. The potential training for enrollment at level 1 have been identified, contacted already and interviewed, and the new intake is expected to take place in the month of November. They have already been selected, they've already been interviewed, and I think there is an intake altogether covering the 4 construction trades that I have mentioned, or something of the order of 34 or 36, I think. I think more were contested, but the ones that have actually turned up, I think it's around 34, 36, and during this week, they're being given the induction and the protective clothing and that kind of thing for the start of the course. They will be doing the generic health and safety thing, which everybody does initially, and then they will be doing an MEQ level 1, and then specializing in the trade in level 2, which is the way the system works under PCB. So, this is the latest information in the context of a motion that the honorable member is asking me to accept, which says that we must tackle a serious skills deficit and that there is a real need for introduction of high quality apprenticeship to meet the needs of existing businesses and emerging ones. Well, I don't know what the needs of the emerging ones are going to be of having to develop. I'm concentrating on the ones of the existing ones, which I know are there. And I'm doing it with the same quality training that was done for 15 years, and I think it's an absolute disgrace to pretend to be seriously wanting to find common ground on the basis that we accept that we've done more of what they were doing. When they were doing, it was less in quantity but better in quality. What we are doing now is more in quantity but less in quality. It's now rubbish. But it was the same qualification, the MBQ. It was the honorable member
opposite who, in fact, corrected me a long time ago, 3 years ago, when I talked about the MVP being one thing and the CDM being the another. And he put me right and he said, no, you're wrong. They're all MVPs. It is the awarding body that is different. Well, look, we're God. And when the honorable member, the honorable mover, asked me, will I consider doing things other than sitting in? The answer was, no. Not because I don't want to do with him. I explained to him, we're already doing it. I was saying to him, we're already doing the construction board certification, the CDMG certification, and EAL certification. So if you ask me, would you consider doing more than CDMG? The answer is no, I don't consider doing it because it's been going on all the time. The fact that you don't know that it's happening doesn't mean I'm being uncooperative or not wanting to respond to you. It's just that you don't know what you're talking about. And I can't help that. Mr. Speaker, in trying to interpret what the honorable member thinks is reality, one can only go by what has been said previously by the mover, and one has to assume that the mover of the motion is, in fact, continuing the same story that he told in the election campaign. And I would remind the honorable member of the radio interview he did on this subject. And in that radio interview, when he was asked about the gold-plated apprenticeship, he said he was very excited about it. And it was about finding an academic route for young people who don't have the requisite skills to pursue a vocational training in terms of craftsmanship. The core principle behind this is that it's creating opportunities for young people so that we can create sustainable jobs in planning, craftsmen, and electricians. Well, look, these are the rubbish jobs that we're training them for now. I've just told you the number of people who are doing level 2 and level 3 in planning, craftsmen, and electricians. It's happening. If it wasn't happening, then he would be entitled to say he wants to do something that I'm not doing. He also said, well, I have to look to new technologies, gaming, and e-commerce. But look, I have said publicly at intonation that I welcome being approached by employers who are interested in taking on apprentices. And we will provide all the support that they need. Nobody has come forward. My department wrote to him immediately after the election. And we wrote back. And what you heard back was to say, Mr. Speaker, that they couldn't tell us the names of the people that were crying out desperately for the apprentices because and I said, okay, well, don't tell me their name. Go back and tell them that this offer is an open door policy. I want to welcome them. I want to give them all the apprentices that signed up. Well, clearly, they prefer to carry on crying, but they won't come forward. Clearly, they are so committed to the GSD that they are willing to spend an eternity waiting for a miracle to happen when they come into government so that they can still come in and get their apprenticeship. I don't believe it. I think we're making it up. I don't think there are people out there. Because if I was an employer, and I hope there are employers listening to me, then I have to tell them, look, you don't need to wait for Mr. Phillips to be in government to come forward. Come up to me and I will give you all the support and all the duty. Because if you wait for Mr. Phillips, all your businesses will be out of date and we will then have to be looking for the new businesses that the leader of the position they will be looking at. Because that's how long it will take. Thinking that apprenticeship for nursing careers, which he doesn't mention, is something not worthwhile. Does he not know that we have got now degree courses for staff nurses and that we've reintroduced enrolled nurses? No, not the degree courses, the nurses, because there's nothing in the middle of our time. We started doing something else, diploma courses, another degree. But we've reintroduced enrolled nurses, which they abolished. And that the system that we put in place means
that we've been training people who were unqualified. We trained them first by employing them to a training company, and they did on-the-job training to become nursing assistants. And then following that, they've gone into an 18-month training, which took them up to NDQ level 3, and they become enrolled nurses. And after that, they still have, as a result of their NDQ level 3, an opportunity to go into the grade of staff nurse and get a degree, even though they are people who were not able to, they didn't have the opportunity of going to university. These are the people who didn't have the A level and who couldn't go to the university. And now we found a route that gets them up to NDQ level 3 and opens an opportunity for them after they've created an enrollment, after they've been working to enhance their skills further and get something that was out of reach before. Is that not something worth supporting? And is that not an opportunity for those people who fall behind? And ensuring that they get an opportunity to get quality skills? Or do we have to carry on increasing the number of frontier workers in our care agencies and in our hospitals, which, if we have a hard Brexit and a problem at the frontier, would lead to the collapse of our medical and services and our social and care services because of the level of dependence created in the last 50 years, which was not there in 1996, and that our electric was. I suppose you don't know it. I suppose you don't know what happened in those years. But if he wants to be honest, then he should make it his job to see whether what we can be criticized for compares favorably or not with the track record of the party that he has chosen to join. I know it is quite possible that when the party that he has chosen to join was in office, he was criticizing it as PDP, and the leader was criticizing it as the Labour Party. But they don't understand that they were right when they were criticizing it, and now they're wrong when they're defending it. They were right when they were criticizing it. He was wrong to have left the GSLP and formed his own party. That we all agree. But for as long as he was still a Labour opposition wanting to get rid of the GSD more than I did, according to him. As long as that was the case, then I think he was on the right track. I think when the love affair started, then I'm afraid it was all lost. So, Mr. Speaker, there is. The jobs that have been created in our economy and the growth in our economy are important statistics, not because it is the inevitable consequence of the training, because the training is only a part of it, but because the honorable member says, without quality training, we will not be able to develop the economy and produce economic growth. Well, look, we're growing at 7.5%. You know, we're actually going to be faster than China now. I mean, what do you think we need to do in quality training to break the speed of sound at the speed we want us to grow? In the 4 years from 2007 to 2011, the private sector grew by 1,339 jobs. The private sector, which was considered a magnificent achievement by the GSD in government. In opposition, the GSD rubbish a 4-year growth of 3,110 jobs in the private sector. Okay? So we grew by 2.5 times as much, which was a miracle. So out of 2.5 miracles, it's a rubbish.
How can we speak into taking seriously and accept the hand of friendship? I'm glad you get it bitten off. Inferior qualifications, Mr. Speaker, will look if there is a, if the honourable member is able to identify the skills that he says exist, because I accept the version of a leader of the opposition that there will be skills that will be needed in future, and we don't know what they are now, but it is clear that the technology-driven global economy, if capitalism continues to survive, which is a good thing, but assuming that it's still that, assuming it's still that, then the voters' own economy will have to adapt to that. But let us look at what is the nature of the economy we've got today. And let us be realistic in what we can deliver. And if we're not doing enough of it, the opposition is perfectly entitled to criticize the story. And if they think that they can put forward proposals, specific, identifiable proposals, that we have not thought of, I will welcome that. And I'm happy to give them a friendly for doing it. So what? What is wrong with accepting that they may have thought of something that we haven't thought of? But it's got to make sense. And it has to be done with the private sector. And I gave the example when I answered the Honourable Lady's question in the previous session. I explained to her what we have done with the bus driver as an example. The coach driver, the industry was concerned that there were a greater number of cruise liner calls planned, and that the cruise liners had only agreed to come here on the basis that we could guarantee that there would be coaches and coach drivers. Right. And the industry was interested in having resident coach drivers because it's not good having the cruise liners, having the coaches and the drivers on the other side, because on that particular day, you know, the guy got out on the wrong side of the deck and was stopping everybody. So they prefer to have local people. In order to do that, we funded the training of people who had normal driving licenses and were unemployed or were willing to take on the job. And then we went one further in order to make it possible for what is a seasonal trade and therefore not very attractive. That is to say, it's not attractive because if there is no guarantee of job all the year round, but by the definition of the honorable member, you know, what we've done is we retrain unemployed people and put them into dead-end jobs. Because if you are a coach driver, even though the dead-end job pays £10 an hour, which is quite a good rate for the private sector, it's not a job where you get promoted from bus driver to, you know, to anything else, nothing else. You're a coach driver, you do the rock tour, and you explain the tourist culture to the tourist. Well, look, that's an industry that we want. That's an industry that they support and that we support. And we invested public money in making sure that those jobs which were not previously attractive to the portfolio were made attractive. And with the EU funding, which I'm going to all give up before I disappear, as members will have the phone, to provide funding that will enable people to begin to be a contract. And therefore, people who were previously not even interested in being given a job on the basis that they were called when the liner arrived and then laid off when the liner left, for reasons that are very understandable, because they would say to me, look, yo, if I take this job, I may make a few hundred pounds in a couple of days, but I may miss the opportunity of a regular job by coming off the unemployment list. So now we're giving them by agreement with all the industry, all the employers in the industry, and although they gave me the credit for it, I have publicly said no, the credit goes to them because I responded to what was their initiative. And that is something that I think, you know, it's important that the private sector should be aware of, that we've got an open mind and an open policy, and we will respond, but they have to come to us and convince us. They've got to produce a business plan that shows that we're not throwing away public money, that we're investing public money in something which, in effect, will regenerate itself, because the activity of that is now happening
result of having 58 otherwise unemployed people to do the post driving means that now that money stays in the devolved economy. Before, it would have been vulnerable to frontier problems. It could have cost us people get taking up a release of reliable cruise ports, and therefore it's an investment that we make. That is the kind of thing that makes sense. Now, we don't say, well, look, who wants to be a culture who will wait till there is a secure, gold-plated, lifelong job, and meanwhile we keep the government employed. Well, this is what the motion is talking about. The motion is talking on the things that the honourable member said when he was interviewed. Look, when he was interviewed in that radio interview, he talked on about the nature of the work. I quoted the bit about the first one. He said that the government should get the private sector to take on apprentices, and that the employers would get top-up grants to reach the minimum wage. Well, doesn't he know that what he was proposing in his manifesto and in his election campaign is less than what we're already doing? I mean, we're asking the employers not to pay anything. We pay the minimum wage. And then at the same time, doesn't he understand that quite apart from the fact that the people who are training now are getting over £1,000 a month, and that in the GST they were getting between £150 and £280. Doesn't he understand that the fact that in Germany an apprentice gets €632 and in Gibraltar it gets €1,200 a month, must be that we are making it much more attractive for unemployed people to go down the route. We're actually rewarding those who wish to learn at a level that nobody has ever done before in Gibraltar, and nobody's doing anywhere else in Europe. Nobody's ever done it before, and nobody's doing it now, currently, anywhere else. Well, that is the level to which we are committed in attracting people, in persuading people that they should take on learning. Because in many cases, the minimum wage is what is being paid in the private sector for 60% of the jobs. And we're saying to people, look, if you're going to have to choose between working as a laborer for £6.28 or being an apprentice for £3, because you'll get the £6.28 by being an apprentice. And then, when you've learned, you're getting paid the same as a laborer while you're learning. And then when you've learned, you will be able to get £7.50 or £8 in the industry. But that is the difference that is. That is what a craftsman gets. That is what a carpenter or a painter or a baker gets in the private sector. About £8 an hour. Now, this is not a wonderful job that you've got to go forward to. So when the honourable member says in that interview that instead of going to UK to do a degree, what they would do would be to persuade people that an apprenticeship is as good as going to the university, and he was asked by the interviewer, well, do you really think people would say that? And he said, no, I don't. Well, look, he didn't have confidence in his authority. And the reality is, why should people take up the job if it's a question simply of wanting, you've got the choice of going to university, the prospect of coming back and getting more than the minimum wage is guaranteed if you come back with a degree. The fact that you then become a craftsman in the trade that he mentioned will not get you anywhere in the United States of trade. That's the reality. You know? Even if you do the level 3, which allows you to be a craftsman, if you change everybody to level 3, there wouldn't be enough certain jobs for all of them. It's not that we are doing less training or less quality training because that is our policy and that is different. It's that we're doing what the market what the market requires. There is no deficit in terms of the market other than the deficit between the demand of the market and the resident workforce. And that deficit is both numerical and historic. It's numerical because we've got 26,000 jobs in our economy and a population of 31. Look, if rates were going, you know, there'd be more workers than the population. Obviously, the requirement of the economy requires numbers that we don't have and requires skills that we don't have. But the bulk are in areas where the level of skills required is not that high, but they still are not effective. If people have to choose between working in catering, which has got, you know, a social hours for which no payment is made, weekends for which no payment is made, because that is the way the industry is. If the industry has to pay a different kind of pay structure for resident workers than what they have to pay for imported workers, they will not employ the resident workers. When we had a situation under the GSD that people didn't want to join the construction industry, which was the original explanation for the low intake into the construction industry, the position changed in 2010. As I explained to members previously, in 2010, the government took the view that there was a reluctance on the part of the private sector to employ local people, and a reluctance on the part of construction companies to employ local people and to accept them when they came out of the training center. And the way they addressed that reluctance was by saying, well, if you work for the government, then you will be required to be on the approval company, you will be required to give priority to the people that will send you from the unemployment list. Something I supported when I was in opposition, and something that we continue doing in government. And in fact, recently, in conjunction with my colleague, the Foreign Minister for Employment, we've extended that beyond the areas where it was before, which was construction, security, and cleaning, and we're now extending it to everybody that has got a government contract for supplying a service, so that we can then have more opportunities. But that doesn't mean that we've got enough workers to replace all the imported labor force. We would need to have a population of 50,000 to be able to do that. We will get there one day, but we're a long way off. So the position is that we're trying to get a situation where not only do we want to have unemployment well below the 300, but we want that the employees that will get employed get an opportunity to move up the scale in terms of the available jobs in the private sector. But there must be jobs that exist, and therefore we monitor what we found in employment, and the next thing we do is we monitor the vacancies. And if I say to the honourable member, look, the average number of vacancies is 200 a week. 50 a week come with a person to fill the job already identified and selected by the employer. Of the 150 that remain, something like 125 are on the minimum wage, 628, which is already paid to the apprentice. And most of them are in areas which are in the catering or construction industry. And the big area that we have not been able to get into has been the gaming industry. And not for want of time, but we've not been able to identify the team of skills that they need, where we can provide people that are capable of acquiring those skills. Because the reality of it is that the biggest problem that we face in Gibraltar is bigger, and I think the failure to home in on that shows that the gap between us is bigger than the overall moment of things. The big problem that we have in Gibraltar is not that there are those who want or don't want to go to the university. It's that there are people who come out who, if nothing is done for them, finish up in what has been used in the United Kingdom and in other places in Europe as needs, which is they're not in employment or training or, receiving education. And that category, which are the people that come out without paper qualification, are in a situation where we have to concentrate in that area. This is why when we started
in looking at the training program that we are doing, what we've done is not to lower the quality, because the quality is the quality of the body that gives the qualification, but to look at the problem we are having. And that is a serious problem that we've got, where when they go from level 1 to level 2, they have to be doing it at work. This is not something they do in the training center. They are away from the training center. The people from the training center visit them on the site, and they have to build up a portfolio. And the guys may have no problem in building a cavity wall. And I use the word, the example of the cavity wall, because one of the things that has kept bricklayers in training for 4 or 5 years was the fact that part of the requirement was that the training, the lecture, the person doing the assessment had to go on a building site and see a cavity wall being built. It was not accepted that the cavity wall should be built in the training center. Well, look, somebody somewhere in Gibraltar has to have a cavity wall for the guy. So the guy had completed everything in his portfolio, he had done all the everything he needed to do, but he couldn't get the papers as a level 2 craftsman until we found a cavity wall for him. But having found the cavity wall, he then has to put in the portfolio that the description all is done. Well, look, if you can lead a level of commander, the English language, or members of the minor man, is actually writing out everything. Well, I can tell the honorable member that that is a real and a serious problem. And we are producing people who got a problem in passing the element of the portfolio and the academic part of it, when they are actually totally, totally competent in doing the physical work. And I think that it's discriminatory against our own people. Because if somebody's got some problem in describing in English what is actually done, the Portuguese construction workers, the Romanian construction workers, the Polish construction workers, the Spanish construction workers, all of whom are building in Gibraltar, none of them will get the NDQ. None of them. It has to be a portfolio to get it. But of course, nobody gives them a portfolio when they get their building site. Nobody gives a brick and a cement and a mortar and say, go and build a brick wall. So we have to look at having a situation where testing the skills is something that is important. Because we want our people not to be disadvantaged. We want them to do the job if they're prepared to do it. We want to encourage them to do it. We want to make it financially attractive to do it by paying them the minimum wage. And then we want to resolve the problems that they have. And all the time we're looking at how we can get around this problem. And we agreed with the union that we need to be looking at local qualifications in a way of making it or doing something that enables the people who are otherwise held back by, I mean, some kids have come out of school at 15, you know, come to the training center and say, look, I don't want to be here until I'm back in school, because, you know, I don't want to stay in school and this is not what I want. I want to get my hands up, this is what I want to do. I want real work. Well, everything that is taking place outside the ball, so the honorable member has argued that he did in the election, he said he had done a lot to look to the UK and that he was going to follow what the UK is doing. Well, I'm not saying he look at what the UK is doing. Because what the UK is doing is closer to what we're doing than to what he's saying. No? Well, it's a speaker. I can tell him that in England, because there is indeed a system of the whole of the UK, England, Wales, and Scotland, and Northern Ireland have each got their own system. In England, the new apprenticeship scheme provides that there is no mandatory requirement for qualifications. Apprenticeships are no longer defined by qualifications, as there are no mandatory requirements. They have moved to a position that there is an end assessment when they assess the school. And this is the new scheme that's coming in 2016, and is due to be completed by 2020. Scotland is carrying on with the previous scheme that they have with their own qualification, and Wales and Northern Ireland have not yet decided whether they're going to follow England or follow Scotland. So, he says he's done all this research. Well, look, I've done the research.
are employed in the ministry in the training area of Dundee Hotel, and they try and keep abreast of what other people are doing. We adapted to what the voters need us, because we find, for example, that if you've got a situation where the qualification is that you want to do an MBQ in planning, you cannot find an MBQ in planning. Because in UK, the MBQ is planning and central heating. So what do? You train people for central heating that they're never going to use. If they stay in the central heating, they don't get the planning. We got to be in a situation where we're able to meet the demands of the private sector of Gibraltar to ensure that our unemployment is not the result of our people having a deficit of the skills that are required. The skills that are required are not the ones invented by the member offices. The skills that are required are the ones reflected in the vacancies opened by employers. The employer comes to the ETB and says, I want somebody with this skill. And either we're able to provide it or we're not. So I'm afraid that the honourable member does not know what he's talking about. And he didn't know it when he was talking about it in the election campaign. And he hasn't learned anything since. And even when he comes to his house and he puts questions and I give him the answer, he then goes on his website and puts the opposite. When I told him in answer to a number of questions that he put to me earlier this year, and I said I couldn't agree with the analysis. I couldn't agree with the analysis that he said that we have to provide quality skills because he didn't tell me what quality skills were. He didn't tell me where they came from. What did he do? He went to say that, you know, we were not prepared to cooperate, that we are not prepared to create modern day apprenticeship and the alternative training for technical skills. Well, look, what he's saying is not true. It's not true in the website, it's not true in the parliament, it's not true in the election campaign. So how can he say that he's coming here hoping that we can work together? Hoping that we can work together in accepting all these fictional problems which he claims we don't want to solve. Where are all these people who are crying out for apprentices? Why is it that having told us that they exist, and having been asked by me to contact them, not one single person has materialized. Not one. What are they? We've met with a Chamber of Commerce, we've met with the DFSD, we've told them to come forward. Nobody comes. So how come the honorable member keep on saying the same thing that he was saying then when it's not possible to believe him? I am telling him that the crying need for apprenticeship from the private sector is a fiction of his imagination. And therefore, we will not support. And I am telling the opposition that, as far as I'm concerned, the version of what the motion was about, produced by the leader of the opposition, is something that is acceptable to me. And it's acceptable to me that in future there will be jobs which require skills that don't exist now because the job don't exist now. And that we need to be in a position when that time comes to be ready for it. But we don't know. We don't know what they're going to be. And we don't know now, even with less certainty than we might have known before the referendum. Because we really don't know what is the direction in which our economy will have to develop until we know what is going to come out of the negotiations that are going to take place over the next few years. Certainly, if there was tomorrow somebody new coming to the vote, look, I can tell you that there is one particular entity that has come to see me, one, with a proposal which may or may not materialize, because as I've pointed before, there have been many false dawns with many, many people, but this particular entity wants to come to do a business in Gibraltar, which I think is very attractive. It has to do with the maritime industry. They're willing to take on apprentices. They're willing to take them to Scotland to do training in diving, which is what the work will involve. And we've already got an agreement with them that if they proceed with that, we will be funding the training. And we've already identified 28 people who express an interest if it materializes.
well, look, I don't like announcing things. I don't announce them before I do them, and I don't announce them after I've done them. I'm just telling him just to make him understand that if he's genuine about these things, it is not that we are not constantly on the lookout for opportunities that bring new industries and help to diversify our economy and help preferably to bring industries and income and employment which is not frontier sensitive.
So, you know, if you can get people here that are going to be using the Volta Academy for a completely new industry that we don't have at the moment and is willing to we have to bring some people in Italy that are willing to give us the opportunity of providing local people to be trained, well, look, we are happy to do that. So, for all those reasons, Mr. Speaker, I cannot accept that this motion is an attempt to create a cross-party understanding on the basis that we are equally committed to providing skills and providing employment for our people, but in fact, a sense of my performance as a person who's been responsible for training since December 2011. It cannot be interpreted in any other way. And the honourable member is entitled to vote on it and sanction him, and the electorate is a judge of whether they accept that he would do a better job than me or they pull me back to do a better job. And therefore, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is what I said to people in the election campaign, and this is what I have to deliver, because this is what I asked them to vote for. I didn't ask them to vote for his promised manifesto which never materialized, on which they were working at the time. I mean, you know, just to put a picture of a book and say this is where the new center is going to be, and this is what everybody's going to be doing, and they're all going to be doing the book when he was interviewed. And he was asked what he considered, and he said, well, no, we don't know yet what it is. And then a year later, in his webpage, he still doesn't know what it is. Those are his new words. He said, we have to talk to the union, we have to talk to the business community, and then we have to find out exactly what it is. Well, fine. Talk to the union, talk to the business community, and when you find out what it is, come and tell me. And you can take a service for it. But at the moment, all that you tell me is that there is a skills topic, and we're on the cliff. Well, look. We cannot be at the edge of the cliff October, and we're still at the edge of the cliff now, and there's no chance of us going over the cliff. What does it mean to be over the cliff? What does it mean? The collapse of the economy? Is it seriously telling me that the economy that we've got to emulate is the one in the United Kingdom that grows by 1.8%, because they are doing things that are making them grow at 1.8, and we're doing all the wrong things, and we're going at 7.5%. So, in those circumstances, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to vote in support of the motion. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, I will move an amendment to the motion, which, as you would expect, will delete all the words after the word "decide." I therefore beg to move, Mr. Speaker, an amendment to the motion by deleting all the words after the word "result" and replacing them with the following. Note that the skills deficit which existed in 2011 was identified by the government skills audit in 2012, which audit has been instrumental in determining the provision of current apprentice and vocational training and resulted in a huge reduction in the levels of unemployment between 2011 and 2016. Welcome
that the government in the 2015 generation renewed its commitment to continue with its program of cross apprentice and vocational training to deliver the strategy of training for employment, which is in line with the criteria used in employer-based training in England and in the European Union. Congratulate the government for its commitment. For its commitment to provide cross apprentice and vocational training and reduce unemployment, and call on private sector employers to cooperate with the government by providing cross apprentice and vocational training job offers in order to further expand the scope of the training program and increase the opportunities for residents seeking employment. And that, Mr. Speaker, is the purpose of the exercise. The purpose of the exercise is getting people into jobs. And therefore, it is obvious that the honourable member opposite know and understand this because they change the speech. The speech changes from the level of unemployment to the level of debt and jobs. That is to say, if you are an unemployed labourer and we train you to be a craftsman, you are in a dead end job. Well, look, you are in as dead end a job as a craftsman as you were as a labourer, except that it's a job that earns more money. But if the honourable member thinks that he should encourage the people of Gibraltar, the people who come out of school, that it is possible for him in government to do something that nobody ever has done in Gibraltar, which is to guarantee that nobody will have a dead end job. So this is what we're all going to be managing other people who will do all the work. And what does it mean by a dead end job? Does the honourable member not understand that the issue is not whether the job is dead end or not dead end, but whether you've got a job or you haven't got one? And under them, they didn't have a job. And therefore, we are committed to a policy that is training for employment, not training for unemployment. And again, Mr. Speaker, it is something that has to be understood in the context of the limitations that you've also had. In the United Kingdom, and indeed in the European Union, the philosophy is that you train people. This is why in the European Union the freedom of movement of workers is such an important issue. Because as far as the EU is concerned, there is a single labour market, and you can be trained to be an electrician in La Línea, and if there is no work, you finish up in Barcelona. And you can be trained to be an electrician in the north of England, and if there is no work, you come to London. But in Gibraltar, if there is no work, there is no work, period. We are training for a labour market of 26,000 jobs. And all that we can do is monitor those jobs and try and train our people for the jobs that look most effective in terms of the income that they generate. But the bulk of the jobs that are out there are jobs on the minimum wage. And those are the jobs that our people prefer not to do. And the skills that we provide for them, and we provide retraining opportunities even for people who are in employment, so that they can be upskilled. We give people the opportunity of doing, bringing to the training center a portfolio of the work that they do, and then they can be assessed. And based on the prior learning that they have, on what they've learned at work, they can be regraded. We do that as well, so it's not just limited to the unemployed. We give the opportunity to those even in unemployment, because by increasing the skill set within the community, we are increasing the potential for income generation, and income generation is what increases the GDP. But of course, it can only happen if there is an employer willing to pay for those skills. If the employer doesn't exchange, the skills are meaningless in terms of economic activity and in terms of the opportunity we are giving to those who are affected. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, I think that without a doubt, what the honourable member claims he wants
to still happen in Gibraltar can only happen if instead of trying to use it as a political weapon with which to criticize the present administration, he actually does what he claims to be wanting to do, which is to say, well, look, I am aware of an area of the economy or a group of employers that are desperate for trainees, desperate for apprenticeships, but they haven't gone to see you. They don't want to see you, but they're providing you with information and I will provide you with it. But unless and until he produces somebody that comes forward and demonstrates that that need is there and is there today, then I'm afraid he's not going to convince me that there is something that I am not doing which can be done. Because the, you know, until there is an employer willing to commit himself to employing the training, we're not going to be training people for something like that in the future. I commend the amendment to you.
The proceeding now is that all honourable members may speak on the amendment.
Yes, the honourable members. Thank you for speaking. I will take a therapy, come back to a couple of things, because our member person may not be as updated as we saw the House and I are on this issue. We're talking about MBQ levels 1, 2, and 3, and so on. Can I make it clear to those members in the same room, those listening behind the speaker's chair, that in the traditional construction trade, everyone starts at training level 1, and you achieve a recognized qualified craftsman by attaining level 2. However, in the engineering trade, that is those that the Father House actually listed as being the mechanical trade, the welders and fabricators, and the electrical trade, there the level 1 is much shorter than level 1 is in the construction trade. Level 2 makes you a quasi craftsman, but the official recognized craftsman level is attainment of level 3. Again, there's a little confusion to those not acquainted with this sort of education terminology. Of course, the father is correct in saying that in the construction trade, level 3 is what is normally accepted as a charge and a foreman type of qualification. And I don't think we're nice apart, but I would certainly wear. The craftsman has the ability. I would encourage them to complete level 3. In the same way that as educators, we always encourage people who have attained a certain professional qualification to carry on and say no. Otherwise, the government and the position will not be supporting those who, for example, don't do a master's degree. It doesn't make you a better or worse lawyer if you're simply a bachelor in law or a master's in law. But certainly, the higher the qualification, the better the academic background in the legal house. As well, I want to qualify that. The publication of what the minister referred to as enrolled nurses via the NDP route is something that I think has always, in case we're sure, has always been supported by this side of the house. In fact, I can vouch for, because I was the holder of the budget in between 2000 and 2003, when I was accountable for the training funds, the publication, we were actually contributing funds toward helping the UHA. They already had some individuals undergoing NBQs, and funding was required because one of the problems with the NBQs is not only do you need an instructor to deliver that, but you then need to have an assessor and an internal verifier, all these scenarios that we just saw our members. But like Lewis and I know, at the end of the day, it's just a manageable machine. Yeah? But certainly, although we're supportive of that NBQ route for those who are not academically minded to follow the legal code, you're supportive, but as the minister recognizes that they were in existence during my party's time in government as well. The part that perhaps the minister may not have been reached 100% by those involved in the education, sorry, in the employment ministry and so on is that yes, it is true that the apprentice, in order to obtain an MB2, level 2 or level 3, and let's keep to level 2, level 2 in the question case, has to produce a portfolio. The bulk of the portfolio is actually photographic evidence with very, very small customers. It is the instructor and the verifier
who have a longer piece of writing to do, and especially, Mr. Speaker, those who do not have the academic ability to be able to read and write properly, may even, the same as I'm sure you can even use a scribe to sit down and do a GCSE exam if you have certain difficulties. Yes? For example, a person whose vision is poor can actually do an exam like in an oral basis. So, I would urge the minister, because I know he's heart in the right place, yes? We can have scribes. Yeah, especially in terms of the teachers who have community care hours to do, they can certainly have scribes in the training center. Because the minister is right, I did try years ago to introduce a certain level of basic numeracy and literacy skills among these apprentices. Certainly numeracy skills come to mind, for example, those who are carpenters, yeah, who measure and they say this is 12 centimeters or 30 centimeters and 12 centimeters, but they need to have at least a basic skill to be able to add the basic to 54. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong in having a pride in that. Yeah. And as long as they're able to speak, yeah, at least become a little bit articulate, then the handwriting does not have to be good because types of papers are acceptable and it is totally acceptable to be done within any length of time. It's not that excuse me, somebody living in a half hour. You actually have someone doing the typing for you. It's a correct notification is given to the information board. So we are able to speak about another minister will take the heart and proceed on it. I don't know who's that is the minister, but I'm only two level four. Is not equivalent or anyone here, I know it is. You see, there's more thing. This particular staff, I know I have it in my office in the Department of Education and Training, is more thing to an HMD that is equivalent. Yeah? And again, if someone can obtain level 4, they certainly receive my whole heart of support. Because, why? Because one of the areas that perhaps we can identify as emerging skills, and the minister already used the word. You know, how can I identify, how can I sort of know what are going to be the emerging needs for the community? Well, as you see, one of the exercises, if I may hand this to mention, is let's look at a current workforce, let's say the housing work agency. Those who are 50 years of age have 5 years in which they're going to start to count skills and points, as you call them, saying this is worth my while being able to decide or not. And they might leave vacancies, which we want to be filled up not only by qualified people, but by qualified and experienced people. And I think here the minister and I both think of the same thing. Yeah? One thing is a piece of paper says, you have this level of education, another thing is, you know, what you learn in the school. The university's role is fantastic, but the university or the workplace is a time equal or good and even better. Yeah? It shows you all the little traits and skills and so on. And I believe. Well, I'm back to the job. So I think at the moment within the House of Representatives, we have great craftsmen who have over the years achieved positions of craft of work, excavators, and so on. And that is something that the training center itself, no matter how good the instructors there are, yeah, they can never teach them. That will be taught in the actual workplace. So, in the same manner that the minister is trying to say that he would like the public sector to be supportive of the pensions and so on. I think we should lead a bit by example, and maybe both sides of the side can actually ask the garment-owned companies, yeah, to be leaders as well in taking on apprentices and so on. I believe all the work agencies have had apprentices learning with them, but I'm talking now beyond the level 2 and level 3. The estimates of the structure of work and so on, yeah, they should also be equally encouraged to do that, Mr. Speaker. I'm surprised because I know the Honourable Speaker of the House is always in love with producing tables, statistics, and so on. And I've never ever been able to get quite in one sitting all the press information that I want to have. I don't know why. Maybe those who always have the portfolio of the Minister's Education have always been able to provide, deducting from questions how many trainees do we have, when did they start, when did they finish, what do we have to do their fees. I know some sort of simple type of chart that has columns at the top. For example, if I base my second question, 684, has columns based at the top, 2012, 2013, 14, 15, 16, and then list the trade. Starting there. How many started at level 1, how many started whatever level, and how many actually completed and at what stage did they complete that level.
I'm grateful, as I said, I fought in 2016 that I'm six individuals working towards level 2 in sovereignty. I'm none the wiser what has happened in the previous 4 years, how many started, how many completed, how many gave up after level 1, and so on. And I may have missed it, but I don't think I've got anyone down at all in the engineering trade other than in level 3. And I don't have anyone in the construction trade other than level 2. Other than the minister making a reference that he was about to take on a 2016 insert where what they do is they do that initial basic health and safety and basic. I think they're doing the mighty trade, yeah? So they're able to get a flavor and then they move on to that. Yeah? And if that's going to lead towards quality training, yeah, then at a certain level I can be supported often. But let's make sure that people who take on this trade take it on because they want to be, how do you say, truthful in what they do, they take pride behind the job, and that they're not misled under the conception that they once got, where I had more than one person telling me that in 2011 they were sold an idea by today's part of the house, that if they attended the training center that he was supposed to, they would actually end up ending in a government job. That perception still seems to be alive. I know it could be many, many moons ago, over 5 years ago, but that, you know, like you say, March 6th, so that's perhaps something that the honorable member has to look forward to and tell us clearly. Yes, sir, you will. Let me assure him that everybody that comes in is told that that is not the case before they start. So once they started, it can't be because they might be under misapprehension before they arrive, but once they arrive, I go to talk to them and I make it absolutely clear that we are training for jobs in the private sector. And in terms of whether somebody wants to be a plumber, in fact, we give them the first choice of, we ask them first which they would like. I mean, if they're only able to take in 8 people for plumbing, and there are 9, then they're given the choice of either doing something else or waiting for an intake. So, you know, but we assume that if they express an interest in being in one area, they're more likely to be better at it than if they're forced to do something else. It is also the case, I don't know what is happening in that time, but some people start in one subject and then change their mind, and at an early enough stage, because it is multi-choice, they're able to see.
Yes, it's something that has happened from time to another, even when analysis structure was in the system. You did like an entry exam, and according to your ratings, those were the first ones that went, and you gave the phrase, and you know, you were handling number 11 who wanted to be in the system, and 10 basically were already available, and they had all gone then stuff. But again, if you think, looking at the figures, and unless the numbers of instructors have changed drastically from the information provided a couple of years ago, I know that the instructor plumber retired and they were training another one that I believe the minister training was in September this year. He was supposed more or less to complete the course. But we leave that question until January. You know, in the other in carpentry, there's more than one instructor in paint and the daily six apprentices there. In painting, there are 2 instructors and only 2 apprentices. That's the ratio 1-to-1 with every school teacher with love and give my salary report. But anyway, that is beyond the minister's control as well. It's up to the individual what he wants to do. But my contribution to that was let's open our mind as well and not just think of today's need, but in the emerging need, if I can go back to that as well, because if one looks at what Garmin's program has been of late and what they are saying is going to continue happening is more ownership, houses, housing projects, and so on. After the period of which, let's take Beaton Genesis at the moment, after that period when there's still a certain warranty and decent system made right, the management company is going to have to assume the general repairs, maintenance, and so on. And I would really love it, you know, for the management company to be able to have local resident workers that they can call upon and we could use good quality work to carry out the repairs, you know, in a good competitive economic price, because I live in a zone of the state, you know, and most of all the work has been engaged in another company, does not happen to be local resident labour, and that is something that I think we should all work together and avoid in the future. The future is there, the jobs are there, they're going to be emerging quite soon, and if the other housing projects take place, then there's going to be a great demand. So, in the same way that we invest heavily in GCSE and A level to produce the doctors we're going to need for the future, let's do likewise in these grades because they are as honourable a working trade as it is whether one is a lawyer or a humble teacher, let's look at the proceedings.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to add that I completely agree with the Honourable Gentleman, and I don't want to get into the whole debate, but it's important to understand that what I try to do, for example, in DCS, where we have a core of young people who are now maintenance workers, and they've done, and they're actually qualified for that. There is a handyman qualification, where they do a little bit of everything, electricity, planning, masonry, and they become what we call a manita, a person who is able to do maintenance. And that is a qualification which has an MDQ, and level 1, 2, and 3. And therefore, those young people who are now in employment are doing that. So these are very meaningful jobs. And this is what we've been trying to do, and we are doing it. And therefore, anybody who's employed now or who wants to do those courses will have the prospect of getting other jobs. So I completely agree, but my emphasis is that it's been happening since 2012 onwards. There are employees, for example, in construction now, who are also, they get employed as handymen or women, because there are a few as well, and they get, and then as employers, we send them to train so that they do have a qualification at the end of the day. So it's not only that they're employed to do things, they have the opportunity to become qualified because ultimately some other private sector, a kind of management company in the estate that the Honourable Member mentioned, wants a person to be able to do a little bit of everything. And with that qualification, they might want to get employment there because they get more wages than what he's been getting. So it is happening, and those are very meaningful jobs. So that's why I cannot understand either the motion, because there are many, many areas in which I know that the Honourable Member and Father of the House and from all the jobs that I need for GSLA, for King's Bastion, for GCS, those jobs are, I send them to him. He sends me young people who want to work, and then we do the training with them. So it is happening. So I completely agree with him that this is what we have been doing, and this is exactly what these qualifications will do for them, and they are very meaningful.
Yeah, I can put this over there.
Mr. Speaker, very briefly, and then the motion. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable there, the Father of the House, is not one to blow his own trumpet at the best of times, but I have to say that in this particular occasion, on the amended motion, he has exceeded himself, and he realises that it's not possible for us to support what is this blatant. Well, it's a little bit brilliant. I'm not sure that it is brilliant because it's just a blatant piece of propaganda. Starting with notes that the deficit was existed in 2011, and congratulate the government. But my contribution, I want to, for what they've done since 2011, but my contribution, I want to make a number of observations. I've listened to the Honourable Gentleman, and indeed, some of what he has said, in fact, a lot of what he has said, I can relate to. And indeed, it was some of the arguments that he has deployed today were arguments that we were deploying from the government benches. I mean, one of the points, indeed, that I made during the debate, and the Honourable Gentleman is wrong when he said the debate when I was in the Labour Party and my Leonard friend was in the PDP, it was a debate that occurred in 2011, and it was a debate where I was represented the GSD, my learned friend Mr. Phillips was representing the PDP, and it was Mr. Likudi who was representing the other side, and that was in 2011. One of the points that I made there was that in 16 years of government, the GSD had created 8,500 new jobs, total, private and public sector. And there had never been 8,500 unemployed in Gibraltar. So it was physically impossible to fill those amounts of jobs just simply to notice. And it's a point in fact that he has made during the course of his own contribution today to take the thing out of the criticism of my or the observation, but if it wasn't a criticism, the observation of my honourable friend Mr. Clinton when he said that if you looked at the employment survey, there had been a very low number of employees that had taken out a job within a particular sector. But Mr. Speaker, I think there are three separate plans. I'm trying to characterise it as fairly as possible. I'm going to just characterise as well our criticism, and I think the wider community's criticism of the Honourable Gentleman's strategy. I think there are three separate plans to this. The first, rightly, is the strategy of the Honourable Gentleman, which I describe and which he has agreed with my description, which is we start from the skill survey that was done in 2012. Let's see what are the jobs, what are the nationalities, and let's try and get Gibraltarians into those jobs. Now, the problem, and that is a strategy that is a valid strategy, and I accept that it's a valid strategy, but it's not a valid strategy to just simply look at in isolation. In other words, it leaves other things to the strategy. And the weakness that I think in the Honourable Gentleman's strategy has been taking it too far. That's my own personal view of the strategy. Because if you look at the job strategy, for example, from its manifesto conception, where it said a training scheme of up to 2 years, it went from 2 years to one year to 3 months, and sometimes less than 3 months. And the criticism that can be reasonably and I think credibly labelled in terms of training, not in terms of putting people into jobs, in terms of training is what can somebody learn in 3 months? I think where one can criticise the government is in an over focus on the statistics. In other words, getting those Gibraltarians into those jobs occupied by families or whatever, which I believe is a valid objective, but to the exclusion of the real training, which is the point that is being made by my honourable friend, learned honourable friend, Mr. Phillips. And I come to the second, because you need a second strand. And if you then look at, in terms of the second strand, you look at the training, the intake, to illustrate my point, the intake into the construction, I think it was the construction and training centre and the other training centre, over the last 5 years, the intake, the real intake, has been one in the year ending 2012, three in the year ending 2013, 11 in the year ending 2014, 26 in the general election year to ending 2015, and 12 in 2016 in the year so far. And I think those are low numbers. I think they are low numbers. And I think the government needs to invest more time and more money, and I know it costs money, into boosting those numbers. Not only in the workplace, I accept that it's valid to look at the workplace because that is an area that is being undertaken in construction, in our construction sites throughout the world, but also in the plumbing, in the electricity, in the carpenters, and we need to boost the numbers. And I think that if one looks at the criticism that's being made by UNITE, the criticism that is being made by the Chamber of Commerce, I think it's a reflection of the low numbers, and I'm quoting from the intake. And therefore, what I would urge the government to do is to examine that and to see whether the numbers can be boosted in terms of intake into those craftsmen, if I can call it that, craftsmen jobs. Because where we add the matching Gibraltarians with jobs is, what we've got to also do is that those Gibraltarians, some of those Gibraltarians, some of them, have the skills that are necessary that will equip them, not only for today, but also for the future. And the first strand, Mr. Speaker, is the strand that I spoke of during the course of my own intervention earlier. I'm not going to repeat it. But I think that the Honourable Gentleman underestimates the importance of it in a Brexit situation. The Honourable Gentleman, I know, attempts to have an eye on these things and attempts to have an eye on the future. So I was rather surprised the way that he dismissed it at the end of his intervention. In a Brexit situation, we have to, and I realise that there are difficulties, in knowing precisely where the United Kingdom is going, first of all, in relation to Brexit. That's the first question. And then secondly, whether we're going to be able to go in the same direction as the United Kingdom. That's also an open question as well. I realise there are difficulties. But the government, but any prudent, reasonable government and the government that is looking towards the future has to be able to look at all the various alternatives and all the various permutations and say, well, look, you know, what is our economy going to be going to look like in 3-4 years' time? And is it possible for us to do something now in order to make sure that our people are prepared and are trained for that eventuality? So, that is the approach. Certainly, I would urge in the Honourable Gentleman, those are three strands. And there may be more, and no doubt there are more strands. Replacing, filling Gibraltarians, filling those jobs, your training that is, the training that people go 1, 2, 3 years, depending on the level that they undertake in terms of MDQ, and also looking towards the future. And that's my intervention on the amended list.
Is there any other intervention on the amendment? If not, I will ask the level of civil rights of the play.
I welcome the contribution that has been made. Pointing out to the area on the technical side of how the MDQ problems that I have identified can be addressed, and I'm grateful for that, and I will certainly take that on board. Dealing with the last contribution, where the Honourable Leader of the Opposition is saying that it's concerning, but we may need to do more. I mean, 26 intakes that he quoted. I don't know whether he thinks that an intake is an individual claimant. As far as I'm concerned, an intake is, for example, if we have taken in 24 trainees to do the website, that is one intake made up of 24. So the intake is the numbers that start the course in a particular year. Yes. No. I think you mentioned that there were 26 intakes. The figure that I was quoting, which is what could be. Yes. The figure that I quoted as the intake, the version that I gave him, is not 26 individuals. If I said there are 26 intakes, it means that in that financial year, we had, for example, 8 drummers coming in, and that's one intake. 8 painters coming in, and that's another intake. The intake is the class, not the number of individuals. Obviously, the Honourable Member has had the number of individuals previously given to him in previous answers to the question. I think the question was intake,
and I gave an input. That's my investment. That was a good way. No, the question was, how many people are currently undertaking level 1 and 2? How many people? Now, that was the answer to people. That's why when the Honourable Gentleman came back and talked about intake, what I understand is that when there is a one intake, it's one person, three intakes. That's the, which struck me as very low numbers in terms of the people that are being, taken on to do the in between level one and level two given their needs. The figures that I gave for the number of intakes per financial year doesn't take 26 in any of them. It was 1 in 11-12. But if you say there was one intake between December 11 and March 12, one intake. That wasn't one person, that was one intake, one class. In 12-13, there were three intakes. In 13-14, there were 11 intakes. At the moment, we have got four intakes that are starting now. The four intakes this year is an intake for plumbers, an intake for carpenters, an intake for painters, and an intake for the wet trade. The total number of the four in terms of individuals is 34 individuals. I mentioned that the number in answer to the question of who are starting with level one this year, in level one this year, in this month, there will be something like 34 individuals spread over 44 intakes, which is an intake of plumber, an intake of carpenter, an intake of painter, which will be less than the intake of wet trade, which continues to be a larger class than the other. So, you know, I'm sorry if I misled the honorable member, but the figure is not that big for this individual, because in fact, he knows from the questions in previous meetings of the House that we talked of something like 170 people having done the level one level and level two in December 2011. But there could be an intake of one, but it's unlikely to be the case. We aim for an intake of eight, and as I've explained, if we have, for example, more than eight people wanting to be plumbers in the ones that have been interviewed. I don't know, I haven't been given the distribution because they're still in the process of finding out what they would like to do. But if there were nine plumbers, then if there was a spare capacity in painting or carpentry, they would then say, well, look, we'll pick the ones that they think have got the best chance of succeeding. And then to the ninth person, they say, look, you have two choices. Either will you wait maybe for our next intake, it could be in 6 months' time, or you can choose to not do planning and do something else. At this stage, it's quite an easy thing to do, actually, because the bulk of the level one creates a basis of skills that then they can specialize in level two. So, you know, and sometimes when they start doing the level one, the people who said they wanted to be planning change their mind and decide they want to be painting or something else. So that is what I was saying when I was talking to, when I was explaining it to previously in my original contribution in support of the amendment. I appreciate the point that the honourable member has made, that having congratulated the government, I have congratulated myself, in the amendment, and having said that there was a still shortage there, well, look, I think, you know, it cannot be denied. I mean, the skill shortage that existed at the time was reflected in the skill audit. If you've got a situation where there are 100 people working in the work trade in the construction sector, and 7 are devotarians, and 93
imported workers, if that is not a skills deficit, I don't know what to call it. Well, I have to say to him, well, look, the percentage is now better than it was then. It's nowhere near 100, because I think it's of the different construction trades, this one is the least attractive. You know? And it's a cleaner job to be doing plumbing or painting or carpentry, and then to be mixing mortar and building brick walls and doing tiles and that kind of thing. But remember that the emphasis is, as I explained already, that, and as we explained to the trainees, we say to them, look, the reality of it is that aerial farm has finished and 300 jobs have disappeared. Well, look, we're talking about giving people a sustainable job, maybe a better job, but it's a job that will be there. The job that will be there will be the job that was mentioned by his colleague. It will not be in the building of aerial farm. It will be in the maintenance of aerial farm. And what we're trying to do is to ensure that the bulk of the permanent construction workers should be local, so that there will be people there that will be able to look to continuity of work all the year round, that will not be seasonal. Particularly, it is something that has happened in the construction industry, which created problems for us from the day that the frontier opened, has been that by the very nature of specialization in the construction industry, nowadays, one company gets a contract to deliver a site.
I'll try to figure it a little bit better.
The point that I'm making is that in the nature of modern trading, we have a situation to pick up on the aerial farm house in the state, where the main contractor subcontracted the doors. We don't have carpenters making doors anymore. A company comes in and a 1,000 doors in the estate. Now, training somebody to fit doors is not a quality apprenticeship, nor is it something that we would want to do in Gibraltar, because when that estate is finished, the people who come in and fit doors will have gone off somewhere else to fit doors. And the industry in the United Kingdom, for example, provide the training for bricklayers. But the only thing they did was lay bricks. And a bricklayer would work not by the hour, but by the number of bricks he would lay. And the really good bricklayers would lay thousands of bricks and would have two laborers just bringing in bricks to lay. And earn £1,000 a week. But of course, for anybody to have a secure job laying bricks, there must be an ability to move from building site to building site throughout a nation state laying bricks, which is done. There are people who are professional bricklayers who can build brick walls blindly. What do we have to do here? Well, look, what we have to do here is produce people who will go to maintain the housing estate of a building, and those who want to be later. And there, they will be the people who will have to be craftsman-made, skilled laborers. There will be people who will be the skilled workers who are doing the maintenance, and there will be the people who will have supervisory and managerial jobs. That structure is a structure that we're trying to build now. And we're trying to build it in anticipation of where the expansion of home ownership will create permanent jobs all the year round. That means, in effect, that the construction industry will have, as I mentioned, you know, in ballpark figures, 1,500 people who come in, build housing estates and disappear. And we have 2,000 people, which is likely to be a growing field the more housing estates we have. Now, what we're doing there is something that is planned, that is logical, that is based on figures. What the Honourable Member suggested was not something that we were doing in terms of concentrating too much on this
is because having concentrated on this, we can see what is achievable. In other areas, for example, if the sandbox says they want somebody to help in the kitchen, and we're sending somebody that has not helped in the kitchen, well, look, we're not going to pay the sandbox for 3 years to have somebody in the kitchen when the job can be learned in 3 months. It is not an apprenticeship. So there are apprenticeships which lead to qualification, and there is on the job training which doesn't lead to a qualification but leads to the person that says, I will not take the man you send me or the lady you send me because they've never been in the kitchen before. In order to remove the excuse for rejecting the local worker on the basis that he has no prior experience and no prior knowledge, we say, okay, we accept. So while the guy is learning the job, he is not productive, not producing enough for you, may actually be a negative element in the workforce because you may have to have somebody else who is productive doing interrupted to explain to the new person how the job is done. But what you cannot have is a 3-year apprenticeship to, for somebody who is a kitchen hand. Now, a kitchen hand may be a dead-end job. It's a different job that some people who are unemployed will find attractive, and we have members will acknowledge, we have them questioning why was the take-up in the sandbox not higher given that they have received support from the government. Well, look, we try to make it higher, and the same thing applies to local companies that are willing to take it on. So, you know, it's not that I am I'm willing to listen to constructive criticism, and if it makes sense, I take it on board. And I'm grateful for it, because I don't pretend to have all the answers, and I understand that it would be asking too much of the members opposite to congratulate it in the way that the motion was, but it is maybe as unrealistic to expect them to vote for the amendment as it was in their past to expect them to vote for the original motion.
We now put the amendment moved by the Honourable Mr. Lefanu to the vote. All in favour? Those against? Carried. Now, on the motion as amended, all members who haven't spoken on the original motion may now speak as they so wish. If no one wishes to do so, I will then ask the Honourable Elliot Village to exercise his right to reply. That is the position.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful for this debate because I think that that's much more fundamental than some of the discussions and some of the comments that have been made by Honourable Member Watford. And in fact, I think starting with Minister Coxon, who referred to unemployment figures, and I think he understands by the slight misunderstanding of the speaker that this is not a debate about unemployment, it's not a debate about full employment, it's not about the GST time in office. What it is about real jobs and real opportunities for young people. I think what the motion does is try to set out the serious concerns that have been highlighted by not just the members in this House and opposite the government, but the union, the Chamber of Commerce, and people that campaigned outside this House. Now, what members opposite are trying to do is to use the truth, the word denigrate, the union's view, who even this group has commented in relation to a serious deficit. Now, the members opposite can choose to ignore the union, the members opposite can choose to ignore the Chamber of Commerce, but at the end of the day, they choose to ignore the people outside this House that handed them all leaflets complaining about the lack of apprenticeship. They can choose to do that, but they choose to do that and they'll continue to do that. But what I would say is that the intention of this motion was to show the government that there are serious concerns about serious deficits in our community. And look, Mr. Lefanu talks to this House about me not knowing what I'm talking about, and I'm not too sure whether he walks around Wolfsburg Place or he walks around Europe, or whether he talks to young entrepreneurs that have employees in their business, that are looking at developing apps, looking at gaming, and looking at individual programming and coding, and I speak to these businesses, and I speak to young men that work in these industries, and they're often people filled with Spaniards. That's the reality that he wants to talk about. That's the reality I'm going to talk to him about. Because when I walk into those offices, and I'm invited to see them, they say they've been to see him. They've been to see Minister Costa, but they've seen no reply. They're not interested. They're not interested in the modern technologies. They're not interested in growing a workforce to feed that industry. That's the same. I think we should all be trying to promote gaming, app development, coding. It's called gaming. It's not the personal gaming that you're responsible for. It's another form of gaming. Computer gaming. Computer games. Computer games. And allied services to the industry that in science and services. I think that's what we should be looking at, surely. But developing our young people, giving them the opportunity to work in these industries and giving them the tools to do that. We're looking at apprenticeships, not a 3-month apprenticeship where we can learn, trade, and then be thrown into a job where they haven't got the adequate skills and adequate things to do. We're not talking about 3 months, we're talking about a 3-year long process by which these people in partnership with business can build apprenticeships. Mm-hmm. And I commend one of the gentlemen related to the maritime apprenticeships that he speaks of. I don't even want to commit to a magazine that's in discussion for them, but I commend him for that. That's exactly what we should be doing. Sending our young people off to get that training to come back and work those skills. But look, I walk around Gibraltar, we all walk around Gibraltar. Walk at Walker Place in the morning and see the hundreds of people flooding the buildings that are not from there, not from our home. Surely we should be creating opportunity for those young people in our community that don't go to university, that don't have the opportunity to go to university, that want to do these jobs. Why can't we do that? And I think that's really the nub of the private member's motion in respect to apprenticeship. It's with the greatest goodwill that I say to all members of this, that I think this is create best opportunities for young people moving forward. Now, I take the point that we make in relation to plumbing, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering. Of course, all of that is required, that's needed. But in a serious threat, which Brexit clearly is for our community, I think we should have a bit more foresight and think as to what skills will be needed in the future. That is what I'm talking about. And you talk about we talked about demand led, and I think we have to do more than that. It's just something reactive to the market. What we need to do is look at what opportunities there are in the future. Surely. You know, I would invite them to walk into those businesses and see them for themselves, and I think they really acknowledge the fact that we're not doing as much as we should be in relation to that. He seems to be, the Honourable Member opposite, seems to be fixated with MDP. He goes beyond MDP in 50 years. An apprenticeship is a long term. Experience for these individuals that want to work in industry, but it's beyond qualification. And that's what I'm arguing for, and that's what I'm advocating for. And that is what people in outside this house when they're campaigning are arguing for that as well. That's what the unions are looking at, that's what the Chamber of Commerce is looking at. Now what you're doing is ignoring the views of the Chamber, ignoring the views of the union, ignoring the people that have commented to me, have written in the article, and ignoring the views of the people in relation to this issue. And what I'm just extremely disappointed that they are rejecting effectively the private member's motion, which is intended to stir debate on apprenticeships and long-term sustainable jobs for our community moving forward, and replacing it with a self-congratulatory statement on what they've done so far and ignoring the genuine concerns of people in Gibraltar about apprenticeships and training.
I will now put the motion as amended by Mr. Rosano's amendment to the vote. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. The Honourable Chief Minister.
This is our move of the House to now adjourn here, but not without thanking the Honourable Leader, the Father of the House, for his blessing. In how to deal with training and debating the subject.
I now propose a question, which is that the House do now adjourn to the year. I'm not having received any notification of any member which surveys anything on the agenda. I will put the question, which is that this House do now adjourn to the year. Those in favour? I suggest carried. The House will now adjourn to the year.